You're listening to The Bulletin with UBS, first broadcast on the 6th of September, 2015, on Monocle 24. Hello and welcome to The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24. Each week, we'll be hearing from the sharpest minds and freshest thinkers in the world of finance, taking you beyond the numbers and the hype and getting to the heart of the big issues of the day. This week, we head to the first ever UBS Global Thought Leadership Debate, where some of the world's leading academics, analysts, and entrepreneurial minds met recently at the McLaren Thought Leadership Center to discuss long-term future trends in the areas of technology, demography, and inequality. Throughout the next two episodes of The Bulletin with UBS, we'll meet some of these experts. They'll tell us what industry changes keep them up at night, and give their opinions on everything from energy and security to health and education. We start with Paul Donovan, Managing Director of Global Economics at UBS. Paul explains why global inequality is what he's most concerned about while looking at the future.
A lot of the themes that we were looking at are shaping long-term investment trends. One of the ones which I'm particularly excited about, interested in, is the issue of inequality and how inequality is changing the political environment, changing the way in which we work, and changing the potential for growth in the economy. I believe very firmly the 21st century is when everything changes, when human capital, human abilities become absolutely critical to economic development and economic growth. We can't just throw more resources at a problem and hope that will solve it, because there aren't more resources to throw at problems. We have to be smarter about how we work. Now, one of the challenges of inequality is that if we have inequality of opportunity, we end up wasting human capital. And that, for me, is going to be a massive, massive issue over the next 20, 30 years.
Paul also explained the challenges which arise from inequality on the whole decreasing across countries, but increasing within them.
What we've seen over the last 20, 25 years is enormous swathes of the global population have moved above the poverty line. And you look at countries like China, huge numbers of people are no longer subsistence existence. They're actually having a higher standard of living. They don't have to worry about where their next meal is coming from and so on and so forth. And that's been one of the really positive stories of globalization. But what that has also done is raise the return to education within developed societies, because you have to ask the question, am I competing with someone in an emerging market for my job, or am I able to differentiate myself? If you can differentiate yourself, your income goes up. If you can't differentiate yourself from an emerging market employee, your income is going to be stagnant or possibly going down. So that's then increased income inequality within developed economies. And it's creating this tension. So in the one sense, we have these enormous investment opportunities as these emerging economies become consumer economies with great, great potential. But in another sense, we have political tensions, an instinct towards protectionism, rising prejudice and discrimination in developed societies, hostility to migration, for example, and that becomes quite counterproductive to the economic development of the world economy and developed societies. So there's this constant conflict coming out of inequality, the fact that we've simultaneously got less inequality than ever before, but also more inequality than ever before, depending on which level you're looking at.
One of the themes of the conference was the move towards greater urbanization. Paul gives us his take.
Urbanization, for me, is obviously a continuing trend, and it has three key elements, I think, that people need to be aware of. The first is politics. You can't riot on your own in a rice paddy. You can riot in a city. And so the concerns and the wishes of an urban population have far more political resonance than a more diverse, scattered population. The second thing is the environment. If you've got a concentration of people, you need to get resources into them and you need to get waste out from them as efficiently as possible. So the environmental issues suddenly become very big. And we're seeing that, of course, now in China. And then the third issue is infrastructure, which sort of is the solution to both of these problems. How do you deal with the political risks around concentration? Well, you raise people's standard of living. How do you deal with the environmental concerns? Well, you make sure that their standard of living isn't hurt by environmental issues. How do you deal with that? You have to have a built infrastructure which is going to work.
One lively session at the conference focused on a theme that many businesses would find interesting. How can you be heard by your target audience? Harper Reed worked on technology for Barack Obama's presidential campaign, and he shares his opinion on the importance and future of data.
I once worked for President Obama on his campaign, and I spent a lot of time building technology for the campaign. And today, I'm planning to talk about big data and some of the ramifications of using big data and our responsibility as business owners on how we need to treat data. Honestly, I think big data and just data in general, well, just even technology, should be treated much more like health safety or automobile safety, where it's about like wearing your seatbelt or practicing safe sex or any of these things that are preventative. And I don't think we as businesses often treat it as preventative. We are more reactive. We are thinking, oh no, we've been hacked, now what? Instead of this kind of, how do we make sure that we are solving the problem before it happens? And I think that's the main thing that I've been, I don't know if looking for, but thinking about a lot is, you know, if I'm a giant mega corporation, multinational, and I have all this consumer data, what is the important step for me? And I think it's to start protecting and being responsible for holding that data.
Harper also shared his thoughts on the importance of such a conference for sharing ideas across industries and disciplines.
It's definitely bringing a lot of information to light, which is the first step in kind of, you know, going towards a solution. I do find that there's such a diversity of speakers, of people, various different beliefs and different ideas, that something good will come of it. I'm not quite sure what that will be. I'm pretty excited to see. But I was very impressed with this morning's speakers, some of the economists. You know, I'm a technologist, so I rarely have opportunities to talk or interact with economists. So, you know, hearing their commentary and kind of seeing the direction they're going was quite fascinating.
While looking at the future of and attempting to predict long-term trends, it's difficult to ignore the role of energy in our lives. Donald Robert Sadoway is a professor of materials chemistry at MIT.
The main issue is electrical energy and, more importantly, sustainable electrical energy. So from my perspective, if we want to look at sustainable electrical energy, we have to think about renewables, solar and wind, but they're intermittent. And so the missing piece is storage. So what I'll be talking about is storage. The whole question of energy is one that consumes me, because everything that we have in the modern world is predicated on the availability of electricity. And if sustainable electricity becomes a problem, that gives birth to an entire array of problems. So for me, energy is everything.
Still to come on the Bulletin with UBS, we'll look at the future of manufacturing and 3D printing, and then hear the thoughts of Jörg Zeltner, president of UBS Wealth Management. Stay tuned. We continue our tour through future trends in fields from reliable energy and cybersecurity to health research, and look now at the future of manufacturing. Paul Markley is innovation editor at The Economist.
One of the main themes I see is the digital effect in manufacturing, which is really being driven by computer science. We have today the prototypes of products begin within a computer. If that's a car, for instance, you can design the car, you can test drive the car, you can use virtual reality to put that car in a cityscape, you can drive it effectively in the Arctic or through a desert, you can do the engineering, and you can do an awful lot of the things that you previously had to use as physical products, you can do virtually. And that, it does two things. It greatly speeds up product development, and it also improves product development. You can get closer to what you want to do using these techniques, and it lowers the cost of entry. And I think that's been one of the most driving changes that we've seen in manufacturing. And you combine with that other things like new materials and robotics and other advances, and altogether you see huge changes.
Paul also gave us his take on the rapidly developing maker movement.
I think what you've seen there with the maker movement is manufacturing has become sexy again. you know, this used to be something that if people did it at home, they did it in a garden shed in grubby overalls and they had an old lathe out there. Now, modern manufacturing, you can do more or less from a laptop. People can use the software. They don't have to have machine tools. They can upload software to 3D printing services, get products back. And again, it lowers the cost of entry. So anyone can be a maker. And what is manufacturing? Well, it's not necessarily physically making anything. That's maybe part of it. There's a lot of jobs around the outside of it now, which if you want to sell your product, you need to be in social media, you need life cycle management. So there's a lot of jobs in manufacturing that don't actually involve the physical art of doing something.
And how about the 3D printing revolution? Paul was the author of a famed report on the movement a few years ago. He explains whether it's developed quicker or slower than he predicted.
I think one of the biggest things that has surprised me since I wrote that, and despite quite a bit of skepticism, is the pace at which 3D printing, or additive manufacturing, put in its more general term, has developed. I mean, both in the many, many different types of additive manufacturing you see now, there must be 20, 30 different types of producing things, and only last week I saw yet another one I'd never even thought about. And also its adoption in industry by big companies like GE and Rolls-Royce and Airbus, and also by small companies who see it as a way of making prototypes. So I think the speed at which additive manufacturing in its general sense has moved into the marketplace is the one thing that really did surprise me.
We turn now to UBS's Paul Donovan again for his opinion on the future of manufacturing and how it might impact on labor markets.
Alternative technologies are coming in and will displace people. That's absolutely going to happen. But at the same time, it then creates new opportunities because you get shifts in terms of what's happening. I can remember growing up in the 1970s in the UK, the question of what are we going to do with all this leisure? We're going to go to a three-day week, technology's going to change, and we're going to have huge amounts of leisure time. I can assure you, I do not work a three-day week at UBS. I do not have enormous amounts of leisure time. And society just adapts and you get different jobs and different roles coming in. So I think that when we look at this technology, for certain functions, these functions will become obsolete. That does not mean that swathes of the labor markets cease to exist. They'll just morph and change, and that's where things become really very exciting.
And finally, we hear the thoughts of Jörg Zeltner, president of UBS Wealth Management. He explains how important it is as a bank to have its finger on the pulse of future trends across industries.
In a world where you have so many moving parts, I think to be deep in the markets across all asset classes, to watch out trends, is unbelievably important. Now, we are privileged because we have access to some of the smartest people. It's just to combine it right and then create platforms where these debates can be held. And I think rightly so, our clients and prospects expect of us to bring these voices into a room, debate them, and then ultimately even have an opinion. So I do think it is very crucial. It's clear that technology is going to disrupt quite a bit on how we interact, where it's going to go, how many followers they have, and that this is something that we need to embrace. It's not something we can fight. I state something obvious, but once you actually hear them talk about how disruptive it's going to be, for instance, to the manufacturing industry we've looked at, it is actually not only inspirational, it's also frightening in some areas. And I think to debate that just shows how valuable it is, because it's going to hit many, many industries and sectors. And, you know, if we're not careful and if we're not on top, and if we don't familiarize ourselves with the trends, then you might suddenly do investments that you'll regret. Now, what I also see in all of these conversations with clients, all of them think about a way, how can I make it sustainable? What does that mean for my family? How can I contribute to society? And even there, we have a role to play. I think UBS's role in society is going to be of increasing importance because the society expects people such as us, our clients, I would even say our brand, to contribute.
Jörg also explained how increasing urbanization across the globe will also have an impact.
It's very important if you just pick out China as a market, right? I mean, there it's so apparent because you have millions and millions of people moving towards the cities. You see the cities grow at huge pace. And you see, you know, for China only, how many millions and tens of millions every year are getting out of poverty. yet, that is the other part of the struggle, these cities get very large, get, I wouldn't say out of control, but, you know, have their own struggles, and we need to fight that, you know, cities are regulated properly, there is an infrastructure in place, there is education going to be in place, and then it's all good. But we shouldn't deny the fact that there is a lot of challenges.
And finally, here's Jörg's thoughts on the future of the global thought leadership debate.
So it's a first for us. It's, of course, not a first where we gather people and try to look at themes, but it's a first that we do it in such a setting to try to stimulate the debate. I think we're going to review and talk to our clients how it resonated, maybe even ask them what their ideas would be. An idea would be to have it travel around the globe. We even thought about making it virtual, so take it digital and broadcast it to all of our offices, gather clients there. Ideally, you know, you would hook up a McLaren Thought Leadership Center with our education center in Asia, with some other facilities in other areas of the world, and then try to make it really virtual.
And that's Jörg Zeltner there, president of UBS Wealth Management, bringing us to the end of this 48th edition of The Bulletin with UBS, setting the agenda in the fast-moving world of finance every week here in Monocle 24. And make sure to tune in again next week, where we continue our coverage of future trends at the UBS Global Thought Leadership Debate. Listen again and find out more at monocle.com or catch up via iTunes or SoundCloud. The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24.